I think we'll get started while they continue to serve dessert for you. But so that Ted volunteered he could be an accordion and reduce the length of his remarks, and we opted to not give him that option so that we get the full benefit of his wisdom. I'm David McIntosh. I'm on the board of directors of the Federalist Society and one of the founders. Before doing my duties in introducing our next speaker, I want to add my personal reflections for just a minute on Attorney General Meese, because very early in my life, he was my first boss in Washington, and as one of the young people that didn't have gray hair, in fact, there's a story I should share with you that my daughter, who's now 9, took a look at a picture of me and Mr. Meese that we have on our wall, and she looked at me a couple years ago and said, "Dad, what was wrong with your hair back then?" I explained to her that at an earlier age it had been dark. But he allowed us, and Steve Calabresi, Lee Otis, Lee Liberman Otis, and others who were starting the Federalist Society and taking it from a student group to a lawyer's group, to spend our extra time working on those programs and setting up the first National Lawyers Conference and going to our events. Without the patronage of Ed Meese as Attorney General, I think it would be fair to say we would not have the Federalist Society the way we do today. So thank you, Ed, for that. Our next speaker has also been a patron of the Federalist Society. Lady, his wife said he needs no introduction. You can make it short, David. But I do want to mention a couple things, because he has been a dear friend of the Society. I remember him at our first conference, and how he has always been willing to participate and lead in ways that make it a unique event for the Federalist Society, particularly his hosting the summer event for the leadership in Washington, but also his annual Supreme Court roundup. But I wanted to say there are a couple character traits about Ted Olson that come to mind that are reflected in the jobs and the way he's executed the jobs that he's had in government. And they're courage, honor, and duty. Courage, because he's been able always to stand up for the truth under fire. I first met him after the liberals in Washington had hounded him because of his unwillingness to give up on the notion of executive power and separation of powers in his role at OLC as the president's lawyer. Honor, because he does speak the truth, even when it's difficult to hear. And he's done it in cases that have made a huge difference for our country, Bush v. Gore being probably the most prominent of them. And duty, because sometimes when you're asked to serve in government, you don't always get to implement your own desires. And I know as Solicitor General, as the 10th Justice, as it's often referred to, there were many difficult cases where Ted was asked to defend the laws of the United States. And had he had the prerogative of sitting in Congress and voting on them, they may have, in fact, been written differently. But he did his duty, and he defended those laws and as an excellent lawyer before the court, while all the time arguing within the private sessions of the Bush administration for the right outcome. So without further ado, let me present to you a man that I really admire and thank for his courage, his honor, and his duty, Ted Olson.
I am very grateful for the opportunity that's been given to me to be here today to speak in this spectacular and revered setting to honor Edwin Meese and to celebrate the legacy of his tenure as the nation's 75th Attorney General. I should say before I start, it's so fitting that it's the Federalist Society that brings us all together for this program. David McIntosh, one of the founders, Lee Lieberman Otis, Spence Abraham, Steve Calabresi, and then with the founders and with the help of Gene Meyer and Leonard Leo, all these years have created an institution that I admire more than just about anything I can think of, bringing people together, allowing them to speak on issues the best people, the best debate, never forcing anybody to take a position or to agree with. People ask me, what's the position of the Federal Society on this? And I said, there is no position of the Federal Society on this issue or that issue. The Federal Society is made up of individuals, and the Federal Society has been successful because it stimulates individuals to think and participate and to share their ideas with one another. And so thank you, David, Leonard, Gene, everybody who's been a part of the Federal Society for making that happen over the years. Now, where did Ed go? Is he in the room? Oh, there he is. Ed, I thought you changed tables on me. It's a great honor that you're actually here to be with us today. They usually conduct programs to talk about a person's legacy only after you're dead. So I want to look around and make sure. Or, as I say in the law, constructively dead. Exceptions are made occasionally when the notable is retired or keeping busy someplace in Florida, playing shuffleboard or doing one of those things as a crossing guard for school children. The problem with Ed is he's not only alive, he's going as strong and as full of ideas and energy as ever. And they all this talk about gray hair. Ed looks the same as when I first met him sometime during the 70s, when we were both serving that perennially youthful, always cheerful Californian Ronald Wilson Reagan, whose fabulous library we're in today. One of our early adventures together, if I might reminisce, was when Jerry Brown was governor and record producer and entrepreneur Mike Kerb was lieutenant governor. Governor Brown, you might remember, was crisscrossing the United States running for president. Lieutenant Governor Kerb took advantage of a provision in the California Constitution that said when the governor is absent from the state, the lieutenant governor shall be acting governor and shall have the powers of the governor. And so he appointed a whole bunch of judges. It was a great ploy because it focused not only on Jerry Brown's ambitions and his absence from the state and his disinterest in the affairs of the state of California, but it also focused on the importance of the judiciary and the appointment of qualified, restrained judges. We had to fight out that battle immediately in the California Supreme Court, and we did pretty well, as I recall. Ed, in your case, what has happened is that the Federal Society has realized that it's an inspiration to all of us to recognize the achievements of our heroes from time to time in order to remind us how far we have come and how much we owe to the towering individuals among us who have inspired us, taught us, and have contributed so much to our society. It's a way of expressing not only appreciation, but of reminding each of us how much we can do if we set high standards and recognize no limits on what we can accomplish. It is fitting that this program be sponsored by the Federal Society because its founders and leaders have done so much to change our country, as we've talked about. And no one, as has been said already, has been a bigger friend of the Federal Society for so long than Ed Meese. The difficult thing about recognizing and praising Ed's legacy is that there are so many accomplishments, but one of them is his support of the Federal Society. And I agree with David. The Federal Society wouldn't be what it is in America today, if anything, if it had not been for that continuing support right from the beginning by Ed Meese. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But I started when I was thinking about what I was going to do here today is talk about a few of the accomplishments and contributions of Ed Meese, and then I realized I wouldn't have the whole day. So I have to talk about just a few of them. But let me try to do that. Number one, these are in no particular order, but this I might have put first anyway. Friend, advisor, supporter, assistant, counselor, and confidant to Ronald Reagan. I need not elaborate for this assembly what Ronald Reagan has meant to this nation and to the billions of people who live on this planet. He changed our life. He literally saved this nation and the world. Ed Meese was there from the earliest days, providing support, intelligence, wisdom, common sense, loyalty and encouragement to Ronald Reagan. He helped him become governor of California and to achieve astonishing success in that role as governor of the biggest state in the nation. And then he helped him become president. And then Ed brought these same qualities of principle, conservative values, patriotism, faith, decency, and fidelity to the White House. President Reagan's diaries are going to be published very soon. I have had the privilege of having read them. 8 years, one page per day approximately in that small hand of Ronald Reagan, which you'll see everywhere in his speeches as you go through this library. I promise you that you will be inspired by them and reminded of Ronald Reagan's greatness. You will also be reminded that it was not easy. There were powerful enemies throughout the world, in this country, and even disbelievers and counterproductive forces within the administration, never fully believing in the president for whom they were working, and never completely signed on to the president's policies of military strength, firmness in the face of aggression, reducing taxes, limiting government, firing the air traffic controllers, standing up to the Soviet Union, insisting on a budget that made sense, cutting taxes, cutting government. He had resistance in the administration, but Ed Meese was always there, helping, encouraging, and supporting the president, explaining and helping him to implement his policies, and seeing to it that for 8 years that the team that Ronald Reagan put together was playing out of the same playbook as the president. Ed Meese was invaluable in that, and that's not such a visible thing, but that may be the most important thing of all. Second on my list is nominee for the, and again, there's no particular order, but it's important, as nominee for Attorney General, and Mike Uhlman mentioned this, Ed Meese taught us grace, dignity, and humility, and decency under fire. In the face of fierce, withering, unconscionable, dishonorable, and malicious attacks on this man, Ed Meese remained the cheerful, steady, gracious, calm, honorable man that we know and respect. The attacks on Ed Meese were the precursors of what we were later to see with judges, Judge Bork, Judge Thomas, and by now scores of decent, qualified, and accomplished men and women who have been set upon with fierce political attacks for the crime of having been nominated to the federal judiciary or even to the executive branch. And Brad Reynolds, who was up here this morning, experienced that. It has been a sad fact of political life in this country that interest groups and their media allies will stop at nothing to tarnish and, if possible, to destroy citizens selected to serve in executive judicial posts during Republican administrations. Ed showed us then that even the most decent, honorable, humble, accomplished, and admirable among us can be subjected to those attacks, and that one can somehow rise above them, maintain one's sense of dignity and one's sense of humor, and show by example and by comparison how small, petty, and unworthy those attackers are. Well, I remember, Ed, once during one of these murder boards that they have for people being sent up to on the chute to be sent up to some Senate committee, this case the Judiciary Committee. This is when he had been nominated to be Attorney General. And so we were trying to be as tough as we possibly could. It's Ken Cribbs nodding his head. I think you were there, Brad, and so were you, Mike, a lot of us in this room. And so we were trying to be as hard and nasty and mean as senators could be, which is, you know, dig as low as you can. I decided to bore in on Ed, and I said, okay, the Genocide Convention was being something that had been a multilateral treaty, and it was before the Senate and so forth. It was very controversial, and I bored in on Ed, and I asked him what his position was on the Genocide Convention. He said, well, I wouldn't want to be a delegate. Number three on my list is his role in the appointment of principled, brilliant, conservative jurists. You've heard about that already today. In fact, most of the things I'm going to say you've heard about because we're talking about Ed Meese. But Ed Meese in the White House and as Attorney General, working with Attorney General William French Smith, took the lead in helping conservatives understand that they would never see their ideals of limited government bear fruit if they failed to reshape and reorient the federal judiciary. But it was not only the principle of reshaping the judiciary, but the importance of appointing genuine, committed, articulate men and women to the bench, people that not only believed in these principles, but could explain them, support them with sound legal opinions, and to make these ideals come to life, not hacks because they'd been a supporter of somebody's campaign. And Ed Meese and Bill Smith and the others involved in this process insisted not only that there be conservatives appointed to the courts, but conservatives with their own minds, their own principles, their own standards, not people that would decide a case a particular way, but intellectual conservatives who could carry the day with the force of their own intellect. Today, the names of Bork, Thomas, Scalia, Winter, Easterbrook, O'Scanlan, Wilkinson, Roberts, Ludig, Alito, Starr, Jones, all those are familiar names to all of us, but those are people that wouldn't be there but for the activities of Ed and the leadership of Ed and the other people that participated in this. These are names that we associate with Ed's policies and leadership. Does quality matter? You bet it does, because their contributions are permanent and lasting, and their contributions exist because of the quality of the individuals that they sought out for these positions. Number four, as Attorney General, Ed Meese's leadership is intellectual leadership in changing the debate over constitutional interpretation. Again, that's something that we've heard about today. But Ed's speeches about originalism and textualism sparked a savage response. So those of you who picked up the book out there, The Great Debate, Interpreting Our Written Constitution, is one of great contribution by Ed Meese. It evoked a savage response. You read the speech by Brennan in here. Justice Brennan actually called the idea of originalism and textualism in interpreting the Constitution, quote, feigned humility, arrogance, and false deference. Can you imagine how awful, hypocritical, arrogant, and false it is to dare to suggest that the words of the Constitution actually matter, and that the words and what those words meant to the people who wrote them and voted for them ought to be a starting point for interpreting the Constitution? Did you know how arrogant you were doing when you said that, Ed? But now, these principles are part of every debate over judicial candidates, and judges must face these arguments and explain their decisions through that prism. And if they don't, if they circumvent those principles, even their supporters are forced to fumble, dissemble, or invent rather hollow rationalizations for those judicial decisions. It's changed the way we have looked at judging and the way we have looked at interpretation of Constitution and statutes. That debate and Ed's perseverance with that debate, and he was savagely attacked. It wasn't just Brennan, of course. You know, the New York Times and the Washington Post and so on and so forth, and intellectuals writing advertisements in newspapers about how terrible this is and how unprincipled it is, and, you know, it could go on and on. But that changed the debate because he stuck to it. Number five, inspiring, credentialing, and leading young people. I've talked about Ed's value, the value of his support for and leadership of the Federal Society. It just cannot be overstated. He provided maturity, legitimacy, inspiration, and encouragement. As I said, today is not the day to discuss all that the Federal Society has accomplished, but I hope if the Federal Society doesn't do it, someone does, to have a conference about the Federal Society. But that program would never take place, as David said, had Ed Meese not been there at the beginning and every moment since its formation to this very day. It wasn't just the Federal Society. It was finding, encouraging, and credentialing conservative young men and women in other positions. Men such as Sam Alito, let's use him as an example. He would not be on the Supreme Court today if he hadn't been first an assistant to the Solicitor General in the William French Smith administration, deputy assistant attorney general at OLC in the Meese administration, then U.S. attorney, then Third Circuit Court of Appeals judge. I could go on. There is example after example after example. These young people had to be found, inspired, and given a chance to participate in government, to have the experience, the visibility, the seasoning, the background, the gravitas that those positions gave them to move up and to have increasing leadership. That's something that Ed has always been a force and a beacon and always been concerned about. And again, it's not something that's been written about, but I bet if we ask people to stand up in this room who are given their first opportunity by Ed Meese, half the room would stand up. Six, federalism. Insisting again and again that now that conservatives were in power in Washington, they had to learn that some of that power should not be exercised, that the Constitution explicitly reserved power to the states and to the people, and those in Washington had to respect and protect the power that they might have exercised but shouldn't exercise because of the Constitution and the way this country is structured. That separation of powers between the federal government and the state governments and the people. Ed was constantly mindful of that, put in practice groups that would check executive branch policies to make sure federalism had been considered. Nobody had ever done that before. People thought, well, what is that all about? I mean, that slows down the exercise of the power of the federal government that we're running. We can do it. No, Ed was very, very insistent that that principle remain in the forefront of what the Reagan administration was doing. This has been mentioned, too, but number seven on my list, integrity in crisis and under pressure. Ed is a man of rock-solid integrity. In all these years, I've never heard any credible criticism or allegation that Ed ever bent his principles or lost track of his integrity. Iran-Contra was an awful scandal that beset the Reagan administration in the second term. I guess it started in 1986. A lot of people forget that when the facts underlying the Iran-Contra situation came to light, Brad Reynolds was involved and others were involved, and they brought Chuck Cooper, brought those matters to the attention of Ed Meese. Ed Meese brought those matters to the attention of the White House. Those circumstances were made public, and then the investigations followed. But that was an example of Ed Meese finding something that he knew was trouble and he knew was wrong, and his first reaction was to bring it out and expose it to the light of day. Lesser men would not have done that. Ed Meese did. What could a former Attorney General of the United States have earned in the 20 years after leaving office? Well, it's a lot of money, Ed. Ursula, I probably shouldn't dwell on this. But when Ed left office, he kept doing what he'd always been doing, giving us the benefit of his ideas in a simple, modest, straightforward way, out there sharing his talent and his energy, his boundless energy and his skills with the American people, standing up for principle. Which leads me to number eight, a lifetime, and this is true, of self-effacing, humble public service. Ed exemplifies the phrase public servant. He's been a teacher, a prosecutor, counselor to the president, attorney general, a leader of the Heritage Foundation. Today, the programs that Ed is involved in, the Heritage Foundation, moot courts for people going to argue cases in the Supreme Court. Speeches, programs, training for people, and so forth. Ed is a constant fountain of ideas and is constantly giving of himself to his country and to all of us. Public servant, the emphasis should be on the word servant, and that is the way Ed fulfills those noble principles. And number nine, through it all, and I think someone else mentioned this too, the good times and the tough times. Ed has always been cheerful, gentle, accessible. I've never heard him be harsh about another person or to attack anybody in a personal way. It's a matter of principle. It's a matter of ideas. He's been accessible. If you want to call Ed Meese, I hate to hate to do this to you, Ed, but pick up the phone and call him. He's there. Unfailingly polite, without ego. I was willing and I was there, a leader who is also a consummate team player. So I don't know what my... This is going to be pretty good. I'm very close, Gene, and I'll give you a minute or two so that people can clear the tables. So thank you, Ed. I should have... There's always a list of tens, but I had a list of nine. Thank you, Ed, for your example and your ideas and your adherence to principle, the model that you've set for us, the support that you've given so many of us, and for your kindness and for the legal principles that you've stood for and the organizations that you have supported that we take for granted today. I'm so glad to participate in this tribute to your legacy and express my personal thanks for all that you've done.
Thank you, Ted, for those wonderful words. Why don't we take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll, if anybody needs to use the restroom, come back and have Mr. Meese. Thank you.